We want to start off with a summary of what Rob spoke about last night, just to kind of cement what he was speaking and really give it a hands-on application, as you'll see. I mean, it's very beautiful. So we haven't showed Rob this yet either. It'll be self-explanatory in seconds. It's just a five-minute summary.
Men's brains are made up of little boxes. And we have a box for everything. We've got a box for the car. We got a box for the money. We got a box for the job. We got a box for you. We got a box for the kids. We got a box for your mother somewhere in the basement. We got.
Talking about men.
We got boxes everywhere. And the rule is, the boxes don't touch. When a man discusses a particular subject, we go to that particular box, we pull that box out, we open the box, we discuss only what is in that box. All right? And then we close the box and put it away, being very, very careful not to touch any other boxes. Brains are very, very different from men's brains. Women's brains are made up of a big ball of wire. And everything is connected to everything. The money's connected to the car, and the car's connected to your job, and your kids are connected to your mother, and everything's connected to everything. And it's like... It's like the internet superhighway, okay? And it's all driven by energy that we call emotion. It's one of the reasons why women tend to remember everything. Because if you take an event and you connect it to an emotion, it burns in your memory and you can remember it forever. The same thing happens for men. It just doesn't happen very often because, quite frankly, we don't care. Women tend to care about everything. And she just loves it. Okay? Now, men, we have a box in our brain that most women are not aware of. This particular box has nothing in it.
It's true. It's true.
In fact, we call it the nothing box. And of all the boxes a man has in his brain, the nothing box is our favorite box. If a man has a chance, he'll go to his nothing box every time. That's why a man can do something seemingly completely brain dead for hours on end. You know, like fishing. Measured this. The University of Pennsylvania a couple of years ago did a study and discovered that men have the ability to think about absolutely nothing and still breathe. You know, they connected all the wires and stuff like that, watched the brain activity, then all of a sudden, he...
I think he's dead! Huh? You know?
Women can't do it. They can't do it. Their minds never stop. And they don't understand the nothing box. And it drives them crazy. Because nothing drives a woman more crazy or makes her feel more irritated than to witness a man doing nothing.
We merely summarized Rob's report. Let's give Rob a hand. Yeah. That's the same thing you said last night when I said, "What'd you talk about?" He said, "Nothing." I must do that a lot because after people listen to me and they go home, what did Ron say? Nothing. I can't remember anything he said. So, is that just the greatest teaching we could ever have?
I don't agree at all.
I
don't.
Bob? Let's, after class.
Okay.
No, and I respect Bob's... yeah. Okay. we left off somewhere between Arizona and North Carolina yesterday, as I recall. Notice that study, and the reason it's pertinent, it was done at the University of Pennsylvania. So connecting it to everything, connected to the gap. All right, we thought we'd do a little summary, a quick overview of what we think we said yesterday. And we'll start off with just, again, looking at the 12 years of meetings done by James' Stone Kingdom Ministries that were really, as we saw at the end of that 12-year session, a 12-year intercession, the first two of which were done at the House of Judah in Hagerstown, Maryland. And the last 10 years were done, hold it right there, the last 10 years were done in Philadelphia, which we said is the city of Joshua, the doubly fruitful son of Joseph. And we've got the verses from Galatians 4, verses 24 and 25. We'll just take a quick glance at them. Pardon me? Oh, you don't have them individually? Okay. I thought they were a little bit further back. Well, anyway, those are the very well-known verses Stephen has shared many, many times where Paul is calling what is old Jerusalem Hagar. It's the city of the Jews. And clearly it's in the territory of Benjamin, and it was the place where Judah, the kings of Judah, ruled from. This makes old Jerusalem the old covenant, which we talked about yesterday and Stephen mentioned as well. But New Jerusalem is Philadelphia. In fact, the only time you see the phrase, or the first time you see the phrase New Jerusalem in the Bible, is in the book of Revelation with respect to the church of Philadelphia. And so out of all the seven churches, it's amazing that only the church of Philadelphia is connected to New Jerusalem, or as I call it, New Jerusalem. Okay, so here we clearly have the new covenant under the New Jerusalem and the old covenant connected to the old Jerusalem. Sweetie, would you do me a favor and get my Bible while you're up? I left it in the bag there. And we see in Joshua 24:30, we're told where Joshua is buried, and we're going to get to that in the next couple of slides. But that verse basically says that he was buried at Timnath-Serah, which means a portion of the sun, and he's buried on the side of a hill called Gash, and that means quaking. And Galatians 426 connects Philadelphia to New Jerusalem as well, because that verse talks about Sarah being the mother of the Jerusalem from above, the free one, okay? Not the one in bondage, not Hagar. So, there you do have 24. And that's the allegory referring to Jerusalem as the old, as Hagar, the one in bondage, 24 and 25. And then the next slide here is connected to Joshua and the number 1776. Remember from yesterday, we said that Jesus has a gematria of 888 for his name. We know that Joshua comes from the tribe of Ephraim, and that Ephraim means doubly fruitful. So several years ago, it dawned on me in one of our Philly meetings that all we had to do is multiply 888 times 2. We get 1776, and lo and behold, the city of Philadelphia is on the radar again. So we have more than just a single witness for Philadelphia being connected to Joshua, the son of Joseph. Now, here's a very interesting little piece of data. There's only one time in American history that we had three presidents go 8 years in a row, 8 years consecutively, three presidents in a row. And that, you see, is Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and James Monroe. You know, you would have thought it happened more than that, but it's the only time it ever happened, three presidents in a row. If it happens again, it will happen again if Barack Obama completes his 8-year term. Well, you add 888, and that means in 2016, we could see some very interesting fruit coming forth, because that will be the completion of three presidents in a row again with 8-year terms. Now, one thing that's interesting also about this 888, if you add 8 three times, you get 24, don't you? Mm-hmm. So you have 24 up there. That's the Strong's number for Jesus in the New Testament. 24. It's 888 plus 888 or 1776 if you look at it that way. Did I lose you? If you go look at the Strong's number for Jesus, you'll find there's really no explanation, no definition other than Lord, but it refers you to the Hebrew Strong's number, 3091, which is the number for Joshua. So, of course, Jesus is the Greek form, the English form of the Greek. Joshua is the English, and Yeshua is the Hebrew. They're all one and the same. Jesus is our head, and when he died, he came to lay in the heart of the earth. So our head comes and lays in the heart, which is in the body parts, and he rises on the third day in the double portion of Joshua. And this is why the book of Joshua is really not only an historical account of what happened way back when, but it's a template for what is about to happen. Because what did Joshua say to the army in Joshua chapter 3? He told them to stay 2,000 cubits behind the ark. Remember that? Why is that? Why 2,000? Why not 1,000? Why not a 500? Why any number? Why are we told? Because it's obviously a timing picture. The ark went into the Jordan River first. And we know the ark is Christ. And we also know, and the guides know this in Israel, because they will tell you, if you go over there, that it's well known that Jesus was baptized in the exact location where Joshua crossed the Jordan. If you picture Jesus, our head, the ark going into the Jordan 2,000 years ahead of us, and then here comes the army 2,000 years later and meeting up with our head, and then going to Jericho, which is the city of the moon. The city of the moon, Jericho means moon. It's a hidden picture of the denominational walled-up church, organized church structure. And because we are told in Matthew 17, 1 and 2 that Jesus, when he was transfigured, his face shined as the sun. He is the sun all by himself. He's a pyramid all by himself, a capstone. But the body of Christ is not a capstone. We are six-sided until we are connected with our capstone, Christ, right in the middle of the Jordan. That makes sense? Together, that becomes the sun, the light of the sun, that overtakes the light of the moon, Jericho, the sun and the moon. That's why in the day of the great slaughters, when the towers fall, in Isaiah 30:25, it says, in the day of the great slaughter, when the towers fall, the light of the moon will become as the light of the sun. That's what's right in front of us. Because the towers have fallen, haven't they? Well, the best is yet to come. Remember, the light of the moon is going to become as the light of the sun. Okay, let's... when the towers fell, they are being replaced by a tower in the middle. And it was called the Freedom Tower. Now it's called World Trade Center 1. It's like the two becoming one, okay? There is an antenna that will be placed on top of that tower when it's completed. And they've been very public about this for years. But with the height of the antenna, the peak of the antenna on top, that tower will be 1,776 feet high. Can we connect a dot here possibly? Is the Father maybe, if he's behind everything, does he communicate through the most conspicuous and obvious ways at times? The... expected completion date, per Wikipedia, has pretty much stayed on around the end of 2013 for the last two or three years now. It hasn't moved, so we'll see how this plays out. But could this be an indication, at least in a very general sense, of the timing for an appearing of Yeshua in a double portion form? We'll find out. We're just giving you detail to process, and there's more than one indicator of this. Our current president took office on January 20th of 2009, and coincidentally, his 1,776th day in office will be December 1 of this year as well. So there you have the current president, the last month of this year, hitting day number 1776, and you have the completion of this tower. There's a tower of unification, we might say, being built up in the gap between the two, and both coming about at the end of this year. Now, Matthew 28:2 tells us that, behold, there was a great earthquake. And this is obviously the last chapter of Matthew, and Jesus could not rise on the third day as Joshua until there was a great quaking, correct? Well, Here we see Joshua 24:30, as I mentioned a moment ago, and they buried him, i.e. Joshua, in the border of his inheritance in Timnath-Serah, which is in Mount Ephraim, or Ephraim, on the north side of the hill of Gash. Gash is Strong's number 1608, and it means quaking.
My God. It's a double A.
It's a double A. Who founded the city of Philadelphia? It was William Penn, the Quaker. There we have Joshua yet again tied to Philadelphia. And also, here's a Timnath-Serah part. That word or that name means a portion of the sun or abundant portion. Christ came to give us life and that more abundantly. That's the name of a city given to Joshua as an inheritance in the mountains of Ephraim, on the north of the hill of Gash where he was buried. So there we have again a portion of the sun. You and I are the body parts. We are each a portion of the sun, but it's not until we're connected to our head on the third day, the third millennium, that we become one completely with the sun. And again, as we've shown before, when the birthing of the Christ child first came 2,000 years ago, when Jesus resurrected, he really only resurrected initially as our head, because Paul said several times that Jesus is the head of the body. And he came out at Passover, And on the 50th day from his resurrection, 49 days later, out came Benjamin the neck, because all the disciples were from the tribe of Benjamin. And of course, that took place in Old Jerusalem, the city where God left, which God left as a light to Judah. So there we have Judah and Benjamin, the two part of the two and the ten, and Jerusalem, of course, would be called by Paul as Hagar. And so we go to Hagar's town, Maryland, for 2 years. Of course, James knew that at the time, or was it 15 years later when it hit you? But this is what the Father does. Then he confirms, gee, you're hearing from me, and you were all along, because he shows us retroactively exactly what we were doing. And it should give everyone in the group confidence, too, that even if you've never had any awareness of what was really going on, the Father has selected you to participate in this intercession. All right, this verse in Mark 16:2 says, "And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre." This is the last chapter of Mark, "at the rising of the sun." Well, guess what? There's a very famous chair in Philadelphia that was the chair of George Washington. And this chair was used at the Continental Congress, the whole Constitution, Constitutional Convention meetings. See that? That is the top of the back of George Washington's chair. You can go online and read about this. And Benjamin Franklin, this is a quote from him. He said, "I have often looked at that behind the president without being able to tell whether it was rising or setting. But now I know that it is a rising sun." This connects Philadelphia, literally George Washington's chair, the father of our country, to the rising sun in Mark 16:2. Does that make sense? Place of resurrection. Okay, Philadelphia. Here's something else. Guess what? God stuck the word phi in Philadelphia twice. Phi el delphi ah. Why would he do something like that? Well, as we hope to show you, the way into the Holy of Holies is through the phi ratio. It's through this phi ratio. And the Holy of Holies, the Greeks had a term for what they called the oracle. The oracle is another term in the Bible for what is also called the Holy of Holies or most holy place. The oracle. And the oracle in the Greek language, it's a very famous oracle, was at a place called Delphi in Greece. Notice that Delphi is in the middle of Philadelphi. Ah, it's a hidden picture as well of the Holy of Holies. Now, you can go online and read about the oracle at Delphi. It's a mythological expression of what is really also prophesying of the truth. You and I, in our Holy of Holies, because our hearts are the Holy of Holies, because Christ came to lay in your heart, and he's the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant could only be kept in the Holy of Holies. And so your Holy of Holies, your heart, has four chambers. The bottom two are called, your heart's actually very bowl-shaped on the bottom. The bottom two are called ventricles. And that is Latin for stomach or belly because of its shape. So when Jesus equated himself to Jonah, who was in the belly of the whale for three days and three nights, he said he would lay in the heart of the earth, Matthew 12:40, for 3 days and three nights. And that's where the control chamber is, right? Because out of the abundance of the heart, Matthew 12:34, the mouth speaks. So the house of authority is in the heart. Notice the heart has these two chambers, or these two shapes on its top. And The Ten Commandments are shown that way too, aren't they? On the two tablets. Because the law is being written in your heart. When Christ enters into your temple, he enters through, in Scripture, what is called the East Gate. Go online and look at the East Gate. It's all blocked up with stone today. Has been, but you will see this double arch in the East Gate. It's all a picture of the law being written in your heart, Bob. All symbolic. So the top two chambers are called what? Oracles. Is the Father hooked on phonics? When Jesus stands up out of the bomb, he's going to stand right up into the oracle. Into the Holy of Holies. And you, when Christ stands up in you, you will become the oracle of God. Do you remember that 16 means love? And 2:16, 2 times 16, is a double portion of love? Well, the gematria for the word heart in Hebrew is, well, it's two letters. It's Lamed and Beth. Beth has a gematria of 2. Lamed has a gematria of 30. That adds up to 32. And 32 in Scripture means covenant. Well, that's 2 times 16, isn't it? So he said he would write his new covenant in your heart. There it is. The number matches perfectly. And Beth means house. Lamed means authority. Your heart is, in the Hebrew definition, the house of authority. So out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Where does the expression of the heart come? Out of your mouth, or your sheep gate, because your teeth are called sheep in the Song of Solomon. And it just so happens that we have 16 teeth on top and 16 on bottom, anchored by wisdom on the four corners. Right? So you are the temple that the double portion of love is from which is going to be spoken. It just so happens that the gematria for oracle in the Hebrew is 216. If the words don't get you, the numbers will. And he's busy loving the hell out of us right now. Yeah. Okay. Now remember those numbers there. A bit down the road. The phi, the 1.618, and the 0.618. All right, at the first Philadelphia meeting, which took place in 1999, James called that the Philadelphia Experiment. And that was because he was inviting me to come for the first time. And I felt my job was to reduce his mailing costs. I enjoyed a modicum of success. But James wrote a piece prior to the meeting about the Philadelphia Experiment in that year. How many people were at the Philadelphia meeting way back in 99? Wow, there's some sick folks. You're still here. Oh. There's a few. Pardon?
They had some healing at the meeting.
They had some healing?
That's why they're still here.
Okay, all right.
Do that YouTube again?
Yeah. You just tried touching two boxes. That doesn't work. Pauline thinks there are spaces between my boxes. back up one slide, if you would. The one we just had. As I said, the Philadelphia Experiment, this took place back in 99, okay, at Passover weekend. Now, if you look in Revelation 3, you'll see a very interesting thing that in verse 10, and God is, or Jesus is talking here to the church of Philadelphia, he says, because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. Well, you would never believe this, especially from when the Strong's was written. But the word temptation is defined as experiment. How many of us know what the Philadelphia experiment was or have seen the movie over the years? Most of us have seen it. If you haven't or ever heard of it, means you've led a sheltered life. No, I'm just kidding. The story of the Philadelphia experiment has to do with a ship that the American government was trying to make radar invisible. They were losing a lot of tonnage in the early part of World War II because the merchant marine ships had to sail in convoys due to the sea lanes, and the German subs would gang up in what they call wolf packs. And they were losing a lot of ships and a lot of sailors and cargo. So the plan was to see if they could actually make a ship radar invisible. And according to accounts, they went beyond radar invisible. It vanished altogether. Now, this is still classified material. It's denied. But there's a lot of smoke, so there may be some fire. But regardless of that, there was already a Philadelphia experiment that took place on the Sea of Galilee when Jesus got in the boat, and it was instantly on the other shore. Remember that?
Yep.
So there ain't nothing new under the sun. It's all in that Bible. Now, it just so happened, and many of you that live here, maybe you know this, but William Penn called what he was doing a holy experiment. So he called Philadelphia a holy experiment right from the beginning. And little did he know that the Philadelphia experiment would someday be a second witness to that. All right, we know that Pennsylvania itself is called the Keystone State. And there's differing views on why that took, why that name came to be. One of those is due to the fact that, or believes it's due to the fact that Pennsylvania sat between the 13 colonies. Six were to the north and east. As you can see there, New Jersey is actually not to the north, but it is east. And then six were to the south. And the keystone is always the stone in an arch that is right in the middle. See it? And so Jesus Christ is the keystone in the arch. And is it a coincidence that the address for the White House is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? Does the number suggest that the fullness of love is coming out of that location at some point? That reasonable? 16 is love, 100, 30, 60, 100-fold? It would suggest there's a fullness of love, a birthing that is coming from that location. We have this further evidence that the Lord ordained that the first colony to be established in America, we talked about it yesterday, Jamestown, would be founded in 1607 and named for the Virgin Queen Elizabeth the First. I call her QE1. Now we have QE2, don't we? QE1 at the beginning. Now we have quantitative easing number two. By the way, that's what the King of Babylon suffered the night the handwriting appeared on the wall. That was a quantitative easing. When the handwriting appeared. All right. Maryland, of course, is the only Roman Catholic colony, and it was named for Henrietta Maria, the Roman Catholic wife of Charles I. Together, they would form what would become the two states that would eventually give the land for D.C. It dawned on me many, many years ago that they were the Virgin Mary. Now, the Virgin Mary, if you read the Super Bowl report, whoever wrote that said that, and I agree with him, that your heart is a picture of the Virgin Mary, because your heart is where the Christ is being birthed. And so Mary means rebellious, and it's associated with bitterness, sorcery. Sounds like a good church meeting, doesn't it, Bob?
Well, if you remember Jesus telling the story about the certain man went down to Jericho and fell among thieves.
Among thieves.
Stripped him and left him dead. Bob Dorn's annotated version reads, a certain man went to church and fell among thieves and they stripped him naked and left him for dead.
You mean when they said, get your hands up, we're going to take an offering? That was robbery. By the way, if you drive on the highways now, it is highway robbery where the toll booths are. So, we were wondering if maybe it would put a little spin on it that would be kind of fun if the toll booth takers would just wear masks when they're taking your funds. So, but the Father is behind everything. Stephen taught about the Good Samaritan years ago. He said, you know what? If I remember right, Steve, the priests went by the other side, didn't they? And then it says the Levites went by. I guess the Levites that weren't priests were the civil government. So neither the church or the government can help the one who fell among thieves and robbers. Only the Good Samaritan. He says he paid him enough for 2 days. He said, when I return, I'll pay you in full.
And who is that Good Samaritan?
I'm looking at him, Bob.
No. The scribes and the Pharisees said to Jesus, say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and thou hast a demon? Jesus said, I do not have a demon. He never said, I am not.
Bob, awesome. Thank you. Perfect. Perfect, Bob. And we know the Lord can't lie. So, all right. There we have a picture of the Virgin Mary and the Oval Office. Well, if there is a birthing, when could that birthing happen? There's 1600 Pennsylvania. Doesn't that look like a good man-child there? Come on, raise your hand if you think that's a nice-looking man-child.
What, the guy on the horse in the background?
Yeah, yeah. Bob, you know, just you undid everything you just spoke. A birthing of Christ is expected in the 42nd generation from Father Abraham. From Father Abraham. Well, Father Abraham, we know who he is, right?
Mr. Lincoln.
Bob, take your medication. One day I told him that, and he said, I did. I took your medication, which explained why I was short that day.
Should I tell him what the medication is?
Yes, go ahead.
We all here are on the same medication. We take the same four pills, the four gospels.
And let's finish it off. The Matrix, most of us see the Matrix movie? Morpheus said, if you take the red pill, all I'm offering you is what? The truth. That's why you read the red words. You're taking the red pill. That's the truth. All right, Abraham. He is Father Abraham. Now, before that, he was Abram, and Abram means exalted father. But he had to get circumcised first to become Abraham. And after he became Abraham, that means father of a multitude of nations. Multitude. Well, how many? How many nations is he the father of? It's a multitude. The Father said, your seed will be, in your seed will all nations be blessed. How many is all? Is Father Abraham the father of all nations? And the seed of Father Abraham is Christ. So can we equate Abraham with the father's name in English? Remember the father's name in English?
George.
George is the father's name in English. And we know that from James 5:7 and John 15:1-2. The husbandman has waited long for the precious fruit of the earth. And Jesus said in John 15:1, he said, my father's a husbandman. I'm the vine and you're the branches. So we're the fruit he's waiting for, the head and the body. And you look up the Greek word, number 1092 in the Strong's, it is Georgios, from which we get the English word George. So the Bible tells us in Matthew chapter 1, there's 42 generations from Father Abraham for the appearing of this man-child, 42, and in that's Matthew 1, and in Luke 3, we have 77 generations from God the Father, George, to the Son, all right? Let's look at our 42s for a second. It says, Jesus Christ arrives in the 41st and 42nd generation from Abraham. And we've talked about this many times. Stephen's talked about it as well. There's three segments of 14 in the genealogy from Abraham to Jesus. You have 14 from Abraham to David, 14 from David to Babylon, and then 14 from Babylon to Jesus Christ. Well, if you count them up, there's only 13. But you have to realize Jesus Christ is a two-part birthing, the head and the neck, and then the body, Christ. The completion of that are almost 2,000 years apart. So the sons of God, so to speak, are the 42nd generation. All right? Now we have these other 42s, and they're always associated with a double portion. So we can tie them into Ephraim. We see that there were 41 movements of the camp under Moses, and Moses dies at Beth Peor. He's buried at Beth Peor, house of the gap. After he climbed up on Pisgah, the place of the gap, he looks across. He's literally standing in the gap looking at Jericho. But he doesn't get to go in. He dies. And he didn't die of old age, right? He had the blueprint for immortality because his eye was not dim nor his strength abated. Jude was, the book of Jude says Satan was contending with Michael for the body of Moses. Why would he care about Moses' body? Because apparently he had the blueprint yet for immortality. Somebody has been trying for a long time to technologically achieve immortality. I read a news article in July of 1994 from the Sacramento Bee when I was living out that way, yeah? And it said the wildest thing. It had a Sunday news section called Weird Science. And in this particular article, it said that a fellow named Dr. Avi Ben Abraham, which made me think he was Irish, was the head of the American Cryogenics Society. And he was speaking to a large group of Catholic leaders in Washington, D.C. This is July of 94 now. And he said they now believed they could reproduce Jesus Christ from DNA fibers found in the Shroud of Turin. That's pretty wild, isn't it? So, all right, we see also the 42nd, let's go back just a second to the last one. The 42nd chapter of Job is where Job receives a double portion. First 41 chapters, total pain and suffering. 42nd and final chapter, all devoted to a double portion. It just so happens that the 42nd book of the Bible, the book of Luke, is the one gospel that records the whole birthing process of Jesus. Coincidence? Don't think so. All right, we've got more 42s. The 42nd president was Bill Clinton. The 42nd man to be president was George W. Bush. And if you don't know, that's because Grover Cleveland served two separate terms in the late 1800s, so he counts as only one man, but two different presidents. So ever since then, we have a, you know, whatever the number president is one greater than the actual number of men thus far to be president. So George W. is the 42nd man, and the 42nd man to actually live in the White House is the current occupant. Now, when I first saw this Virgin Mary connection years ago, I remember thinking it will be connected to the 42nd man that actually lives in the White House, because the Virgin Mary, the womb, is the Oval Office. We'll see how this plays out here. One thing I'd like to share right now, and this involves what happened in 2001. And these two numbers right here. Could you go to the last of the 42s. There is the state of Washington is the 42nd state, and we've known for many years that Washington is a parallel. Washington State, where Steve was for a few years, is a parallel prophetically to Washington, D.C. It's also interesting that Rome happens to be located, the city of Rome, on the 42nd latitude north, virtually on top of it. Its counterpart, Washington, D.C., happens to be located on the 77th longitude west. Remember our 42 and 77? All right? And then we find in this slide that the 42nd anniversary of Apollo 11 was on July 20th of 2011. Well, what's that important for? Remember I said the sun and the moon? NASA, their first space missions were called Mercury, which is the messenger. Remember Alan Shepard? Are you old enough to remember going up and coming back down? Then they had Gemini. John Glenn was the first one to circle the Earth. Then they went to Apollo because that's the sun god, because they knew they were going to the moon. Somebody might have been saying, we're the sun setting foot on the moon. And the 42nd anniversary of that event from July 20th, 1969, was July 20th of 2 years ago. That happened to be our current president's day number 911 in office. That may have some significance down the road. We've got a couple more 42s. And very important, Hezekiah, who is the king that was sick unto death, that was given 15 additional years, had what obviously was a very special son, because he had no son to carry on the kingly throne. And God had promised there would always be a king on the throne of Israel until the Messiah came. So Hezekiah prays when he's sick unto death, and he's given an extension of 15 years. Well, we know that Hezekiah, according to the Bible, was 25 when he became king. We're told he died at 54, 29 years later. So therefore, when he got his 15-year extension, he would have been 39, correct? That makes sense? Okay. He would have been 39? He was 25. He reigned for 29 years. He died at 54. That meant that was at the end of the 15-year extension he got. He was sick unto death when he was 39. We're not told how old Manasseh was, when Manasseh was born. We're just told that Manasseh was 12 when he died at 54. So therefore, Hezekiah was 42 when he had Manasseh. Wow. We know that the 66 chapters of Isaiah correspond to the 66 books of the Bible. It's no accident then that in the 39th and final chapter of what is the last chapter of the Old Testament, chapter 39 in Isaiah is all about Hezekiah. Hezekiah. The 42nd chapter of Isaiah corresponds to the book of Luke, and that's what that corresponds to Manasseh. Manasseh is obviously a repairer of the breach, because what is the king of Judah naming this child Manasseh, one of the names of the sons of Israel, the house of Israel, that he's fighting with, that Judah is fighting with? Manasseh is a repairer of the breach. On the night of the night before his election in 2008, the last campaign stop for Barack Obama was Manassas, Virginia. Right after that, right after his election, a certain talk show host began calling him the man-child president. But it wasn't in positive terms at that point. But the father ignores the emotions and just says, yeah, I have to follow the prophetic utterance. So, all right, we find that Elisha begins his double portion ministry with two she-bears coming out and tearing 42 children. I mean, what is that about? Here's a modern application again. 42 was Jackie Robinson's number. He's the individual that broke the color barrier. There's a movie coming out next month about his life. You know what it's called? It's called 42. That is a great looking movie. I recommend that everyone seen that movie. Yeah, we've got the trailer with. We can do it. We can either do it in a minute here or later on. All right. Let's just go a couple more here, real quick. Do we have 4 or 5 yet? Minutes?
5 minutes.
Okay. All right. Hold it right there. In 2001, I felt that we might see something occur relative to the Pentagon, and that's because, why don't you go ahead and go to the Pentagon. There's a very strange verse in 1 Kings 6:31, and this is, of course, our Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia. And Pauline's going to pull up this screen right here, 1 Kings 6:31, and this is taken from the RSV version, the Revised Standard, a modern version. It literally says, "For the entrance to the inner sanctuary, he made doors of olive wood. The lintel and the door posts formed a pentagon." This is talking about the entrance into Solomon's Holy of Holies in his temple. It's a pentagonal entrance. It's a pentagon. And if you draw an equal-sided pentagon, you'll find this. The 5 outer points, A, B, C, D, and E, if you connect them, any one of the lines you connect, the length of that line, and there you see AC over the side AB, equals 1.618. It's a phi ratio. It is always a phi ratio. There you see them all being connected. What you've got inside is a five-pointed star, but within the center of the five-pointed star, you have another pentagon. And in theory, you can continue to draw that shape to infinity. It's a doorway from matter into energy or spirit. It's the only shape that will do this, replicate itself over and over and over again into the box of nothingness. Einstein said there was nothing there, but Tesla said, no, it's loaded. And so this pentagon is very interesting. Did Jesus demonstrate this at the cross? In more than one way, but here's one way. The two names for the place where he was crucified, Calvary and Golgotha, the gematria for Calvary is 301, and Golgotha is 186. You divide one into the other. It's 1.618. So, yes, Bob?
Ron, as you know, God is omnipresent. So the box in the male mind is utterly pure because it's only full of God. It's the Holy of Holies.
Amen. Amen. Bob? I'll just say this. Resistance is futile. All right, close with this thought right here. 42 and 77. In Phi, you want to pull up the alphabet if you can find that one? Phi happens to be, as we said yesterday, the 21st letter in the Greek alphabet. And there you see it. It's on every computer. It's on your cell phones. That's a phi. That's an on-off, a yes-no. That's a male and female union there. It's everywhere. You just didn't know it. And the entranceway into the Holy of Holies through this pentagonal picture is through the phi ratio. This is why the Republican convention had to be in Phi El Delphi in 2000 before George W. Bush's election. I mean, George W. Bush, the only man whose middle initial is used, is the 42nd man to be president. What Al Gore never had a chance. The father of our country was a husbandman, George W., the 42nd, like father, like son. Man, to be president was going to be George W., wasn't it? All right. Now, you got to look beyond the external, okay? If you make a judgment on somebody, you're going to go blind in trying to understand God's prophetic. The Bible tells us that the 42nd generation is when Christ appears. So is George W. the 42nd from the Father? Yes, he would be for his entire presidency, the 42nd man to be president. Well, what about the 77th in Luke 3? All right? The father's name is George. What was George W.'s biological dad's name? Or what is it? Yeah, it is George. It so happened that George H.W. turned 77 on June 12th of 2001. All right, we've got the phi ratio. It's the 21st letter in the Greek. And we entered the 21st century. Let me do it this way. The 21st century in, there it is. 21st century, when? On 1-1-01. We entered the 21st century. So, we know that the phi ratio, it's associated with the pentagonal opening. And if we follow our data points, we find that there's a period between June 12th of 2001 and December 31st of 2001 where it would be the only time in history, because this is Israel, where we would have a perfect fit of the 42nd generation from Father Abraham and the 77th generation from God the Father George, where the Pentagon, the way into the Holy of Holies, could be opened. And it was, wasn't it? On 9-11. 9-11, in Hebrew, the first three words in the Bible, the gematria of in the beginning, adds up to 9-1-1. The word grace in the English, or in Greek, excuse me, adds up to 9-1-1. The very first verse in the Bible, in the beginning God, or in the beginning, and the very last verse in the Bible, now may the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with you, begins, the Bible begins and ends with 9-11. What 9-11 really is a setup for the greatest outpouring of grace in the history of the world since the cross. That's what the setup is. And we'll show you the rest of that story later on, if you would like.